This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, aka the world's most dangerous sports show, aka iTunes' longest running weekly episodic sports podcast produced by two or more African Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather named Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham and Marcus Vanderberg. Fellas, it is Super Bowl week. What is going on?
What's up, Nate?
How's it going, Nate?
Doing good. I'm doing good. I'm excited about today's show. Of course, we're going to talk about the big game. We're going to give our official predictions and put them down and lock them in stone so we can make fun of whoever gets it wrong next week. And then, of course, you know, we got some big news in the world of wrestling to talk about. We got some NBA news to talk about. And, of course, we have the ratchetness of segment four, because the ratchetness does not stop just because the East Coast is trapped in an Armageddon of snow.
The South, not the East Coast. The East Coast knows how to handle snow. The South, though, struggle. The struggle
you see
is real.
The stories that are the true testament of the spirit, with Chipper Jones going out in the wilderness and picking Freddie Freeman up on his little motorcycle.
He wasn't picking up Jason Hayward. He was picking up Freddie Freeman. So
I was just going to say, he wasn't picking up anybody with a darker skin tone.
Yeah, sorry, Terry Pendleton. No ride for you, Terry.
It was only a one-seater. It was only a two-seater. You know, he couldn't get everybody in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great excuse. I'm sure his lawyer would love that.
Hey! I'm coming back for you, BJ. But it's two seater. I'll be back. Just keep waiting. Oh yeah, but yeah, Atlanta going crazy. We got some snow here in Virginia. Like Wednesday or Tuesday night, it was crazy, and it snowed from like 8 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the evening to like 6 o'clock in the morning. So it was crazy. And then after that, it stopped and the snow was melted. Like it's almost gone. So it was like one day. It was the one big event, and then, you know, a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing, which may be the case on Sunday in MetLife Stadium, the sometimes home of the Kings of Sport, where the Seahawks are going to be taking on the Broncos, the number one defense in the NFL going up against the number one offense. And, fellas, like Marcus and I were talking before the show, Alfred, not a lot of noise taking place during media week, you know, or media day this week, outside of the Marshawn Lynch controversy, quote unquote. You know, there really wasn't a lot, you know, of noise being made.
Yeah, and the Marshawn Lynch quote unquote controversy was pretty much built around him saying that he's not going to say much. So the media day component of the Super Bowl, I don't even want to say it's overrated, because I don't think people really expect much out of media day anymore. I'm not at all surprised that Richard Sherman didn't go crazy like he did after his win over the San Francisco 49ers during media day, because that's just basically when it's quiet. Players are advised not to talk too much trash, to give the opponent so-called bulletin board material. And it's just another day at the office for a lot of these guys with media day. The only subplot or sub-storyline for media day is when these crazy reporters from local TV stations ask all these ridiculous questions designed to throw the players off their game. Other than that, there's nothing to media day.
I went to media day when the Super Bowl was in Dallas a few years ago, and it's such a shit show. Like, it's just a spectacle. I mean, and once they started opening up to the public, where the public was allowed to buy tickets and sit in on this mess, I mean, it's been a while since we've had someone drop a pipe bomb at media day. And I wasn't surprised, especially with these two teams. Denver you know, Peyton Manning sort of sets that tone in terms of how they handle things. And Seattle, even though they're sort of new to this whole environment, there's not, I mean, outside of Richard Sherman, who we knew, who we already addressed, but there's no one on this team that really is going to come out and, you know, start something or see something crazy. They're pretty relaxed, pretty reserved. So just another day at the office for those guys in the media. And I'm just glad this game's almost over with and we can just focus on anything else but the Super Bowl. I'm over it.
So quick question, though. When you were at media day in Dallas, was, because my favorite person is, you know, when they get the personalities to show up to ask the questions, my favorite person was always the chick from Telemundo that would show up in the wedding dress. Was she there?
Yes, she was. I might have pictures somewhere on my Facebook.
Like, that is just a great gimmick. Like, you forget the multitude of the myriad of reporters at those events, but you ain't going to forget the Spanish chicken address asking quarterback questions.
Well, we didn't have those little Terrio, who was at Media Day this year.
Really?
Yeah.
I missed that one. So who was he talking to?
He was with Deshaun Jackson. I don't know who, what media company got him a credential, but he was there.
World star hip hop, son.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I want to go back and just look that up after the show just so I can see that. Because it's, I mean, well, then again, like, little Terrio by himself is not, you know, he's not an attraction. If his cousin's there, that's because his cousin's the hype man.
Kill him!
Ooh, kill him!
Ooh, kill him!
I can't believe that kid's only 6 or 7. That's,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought he had one of those Gary Coleman diseases at first. Like, he was really like 46. But he just looked like
he's pretty sharp for a 6-year-old.
He is.
So that's why I was confused. And I was like, nah, he can't be 6, but now he's 6.
You thought he had Benjamin Button disease?
Yeah.
He's really 56. we might have to get Lil Terrio on the show one week. It's probably not going to happen, but we'll just throw it out there.
We could do it.
Yeah. But speaking of the Super Bowl, oh, real quick, the only other kind of story that came up was the interview on the Today Show with Tony Dungy and Jonathan Martin, which came, 3 months after the incident happened with the Dolphins. So real quick, Big Nasty, what was your take on those comments? And do you think it's a matter of too little too late with Jonathan Martin?
I don't think it's too little too late. Whenever you have the stamp of approval of a guy like Tony Dungy, who's universally respected in the NFL, let me remind you, this is the guy who got Michael Vick a job pretty much. And Michael Vick was persona non grata. So the fact that now he's, you know, pretty much linked with John Martin, I think is a good sign for Jonathan Martin, for a sign of recovery. And I really do think that Tony Dungy will have the connections to hopefully get this whole thing behind Jonathan Martin so that we, I mean, this is really, at this point, Richie Incognito, this whole thing has already gone through the 24-hour news cycle, and it's one of those stories where people aren't going to look at that and say, oh, that's right, that was that one terrible story. They're just going to look at that and be like, what happened with that again? That was that bully who, you know, I don't think Jonathan Martin's as big of a story.
I still think he's done in the NFL. I don't see him coming back.
Really?
Yeah. I can't see a team going out of the way to sign him, and then you're running the risk of having these guys. I mean, if I'm a locker room, I would probably try to test him right away, just to see if he's really learned from what happened, and it just creates possibly another bad scenario for him and for whatever locker room he's in. So I don't see him ever coming back.
I think he'll be back just because, you know, good quality linemen are hard to find. He's not a superstar by any means, but he's a versatile lineman and can play different positions. I think he will get a shot, but it has to be with the right team. It has to be with a team that is structured from the top down with, in terms of discipline, the coach, the team leaders. You know, you mentioned Peyton Manning setting the tone for Denver Broncos. I could see him fitting in an organization with like that, with a defined team leader. Whereas with the Dolphins, it was kind of like the Wild Wild West. When Richie Incognito is one of your team leaders, that speaks volumes about, you know, who you got in your locker room.
Yeah, and Incognito, this is a Richie Incognito story. His name was more closely attached to this than Jonathan Martin. I think Jonathan Martin was just kind of like a bypass. I don't want to say innocent bystander, but he was a bystander in this story. People aren't going to remember him as readily as Richie Incognito, so I don't think it's going to be as much of a distraction. And, you know, again, seeing him with Tony Dungy, I think is already a sign that this guy's already got an inroad back into the NFL.
Just no more pictures of him at the strip club, because that's not going to help his case.
Hey, he wasn't bullying those girls.
Well, he said he had an issue with going to the strip club, so.
So you saying no? I say maybe. Alfred, do you think he gets another shot next season?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So,
he'll be great on the Argos and the CFL.
Oh, somebody's got to block for Tebow.
Yeah.
Maybe the Hard Knocks team. Whatever team goes to Hard Knocks will bring him in just for a ratings bump. And then when everybody stops looking, they'll get rid of him.
Oh, they'll bring in Jonathan Martin and Kerry Rhodes.
Yeah.
Best season ever. Featuring a cameo from Hollywood Simpson. That would be
Pac-Man. Throw in Pac-Man, too.
Oh, Pac-Man Jones? Yeah.
We've already done the Bengals twice.
And what was the boy we were talking about last week? I already forgot. The two jars of Vaseline.
Oh, Kellen Winslow.
Oh yeah, I'm a soldier. Yeah, put the soldier on that team too. That's what I would do if I were like the Jaguars. I'd just book for Hard Knocks. I'd bring in all these head cases. Bring T.O. back.
Draft Johnny Manziel.
Greatest season ever. So. Speaking of teams that want to end their season on a great note, the Seahawks and the Broncos, the kind of storyline that's being played out thus far by all the analysts is the defense of the Seahawks taking on the offense of the Denver Broncos. But it's not that easy. It's not that black and white. You know, Seattle's offense is going to have to step up. Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, those boys are going to have to do some work. And Denver's defense is going to have to step up, especially, you know, that front four. So, you know, just kind of what were your takeaways from the kind of week of discussion, Big Nasty, and, you know, where are you leaning right now? We'll do our official picks at the end of the segment, but where are you leaning right now?
Well, in addition to the defense versus offense discussion, I think one of the main narratives has been Peyton Manning's legacy. And what drives me crazy about how people are looking at this game is there are a lot of reporters, a lot of analysts who are saying, well, if Peyton Manning wins this game, greatest quarterback ever. And it's like, it's not that easy to where the guy's got one ring and if he wins, he'd be the greatest ever. Because if he loses, I already know people are going to be crucifying him and the greatest ever discussion will go away. So to me, that tells me that I don't think he should even be in discussion right now as far as number one. Now, where am I leaning? I just think that with the Seahawks defense, and the offense that they do have, because, yeah, Russell Wilson's been struggling, but the type of game this is going to be, it's going to be a very running back-friendly game. And Marshawn Lynch, I think, is the best running back on the field. And that team aspect, it just reminds me of the New York Giants against the New England Patriots in 2008, where that pressure in that front four and the pressure they were able to get on Tom Brady was the difference. I think it's going to be one of those games that I'm leaning toward the Seahawks.
Yeah, I agree with Alfred. But, you know, as we get closer to the game, the more the weather changes, and it seems like the warmer it's going to be. So I think the warmer it gets on game day, you know, the more that's going to help Peyton Manning. We went from possibly having some snow at the beginning of the week to now we're talking about a high of 50 in New Jersey on Sunday. So I think the defense will have a huge impact in this game. I think Seattle might need to rely on a turnover or two to really help them get points. And if those things work out, then, yeah, I'm leaning towards Seattle as well.
See, I think the weather has a lot to do with it. You know, it was so bad last week they were talking about rescheduling the game to Saturday, which would have been a colossal mistake in my opinion. But like you said, Marcus, it's going to be practically balmy on Sunday. So I think that does favor Denver in that passing attack. And, you know, the old saying that everybody always likes to throw out there, the defense wins championships. Well, points win games. And, you know, this is one game, you know, and win and take all. And I think for one game, I'm going to, you know, side with Peyton Manning. So I'm leaning towards Denver just because I think this has been one of his best seasons. I think Denver's defense, it's not great. It's not a world beater, but they're sufficient. And, you know, with that offense, with those receivers, I think that, you know, it might be a little bit too much. As great as Seattle's defensive secondary is, I don't think they faced a team with as many weapons as the Denver Broncos.
I will say this, though. If Manning does lose, I'm not a big Peyton Manning guy either way. I'm sort of indifferent. But if he does lose, I'm going to feel bad for him because I feel like the media is just going to jump on his case. Regardless if it's his fault or not, we're going to be stuck with a whole week of is Peyton a fraud talk. And that's not really fair to him, assuming that he doesn't, you know, cost the game or anything like that. But even still, I'm not ready for that whole week of media spin out from this game.
It's almost like LeBron James, like before it LeBron is. Won his championship. And the sad thing is, Peyton's already got a ring. Like that ring is invalidated because of this hypothetical conversation that people are like, is he the greatest ever? If he wins this, will it be? He's not. Either way, he's not going to be the greatest ever. To me, that's still Joe Montana.
Yeah.
But, you know, to try to define his legacy on one game while just kind of neglecting the fact, A, he has a ring, and B, he just had one of the greatest regular seasons a quarterback has ever had. Like, I think it's just silly, and it's kind of a byproduct of, you know, just the talking heads that need something to talk about.
Yeah, but the fact that they are invalidating his Super Bowl win, it's like he's already done damage to that with the subsequent playoff failures that he's had. And for that, I just don't think, if you're the greatest, like, let's say Michael Jordan, the second time he goes to play the Jazz, he's in trouble, and he's down 3-2. Nobody's talking about whether or not, okay, well, he needs this ring in order to be the greatest. He has already won 5. He'd already gone 5-0. His legacy was set. That tells me, okay, that's what a greatest of all time resume would be like. I'm not saying necessarily Peyton Manning has to win 5 Super Bowls or whatnot. I'm saying that he's so on the fence that if it's not indisputable and he's not the name that comes to your mind, which he's not with a lot of these analysts who have to look at this last game, I just think that conversation goes away. But I'm with Marcus. I like the angle Marcus took in that, yes, Peyton Manning would get crucified, and I would feel bad for him. But I think that's more of how overreactionary people have become as our society has grown, in that either way, I don't think it would be fair for people to say anything about Peyton Manning. But it's going to go one way or the other. He's either going to be the greatest ever or a choke artist. And I think that's unfair.
Just to compare Manning to Brady, when Brady lost his last Super Bowl, Randy, he was never really in the discussion for greatest ever. But Brady got a pass. No one really went after Brady because his resume is hard to challenge either way. You know, regardless of him losing now multiple Super Bowls, no one's really gone after him. And I think that's the difference between him and Manning, is he doesn't have that built-in protection yet of terms of he can lose and still be okay. You know, Brady can lose probably another time and still say, hey, look, I got these other rings on me. Manning can't afford that right now.
And it's
that similar to Jordan.
It's what it is. It's like, you know, it's this crazy semantics where the line keeps moving. It's like either way, Peyton is, in my opinion, he's one of the 5 greatest quarterbacks ever. You know, but yes, at least he's in your top 10. So it's like, you know, you're making a decision whether he's at one end of the table, at, you know, the right side of the table, the left side of the table, or at the head of the table. Either way, he's at the table, you know, on that short list of the conversation, you know, along with Brady, along with Joe Montana, along with Elway, Marino, cats like that, you know. So it's like the people that say this is the game that defines his career, no, his career is what defines his career. You know, it's a sum total, and the fact that he has said, you know, this week that he feels like he could play another 2-3 years, or even longer, like, that to me says that, you know, the book is not closed on Peyton Manning. Like, you know, we might be looking back 3 years from now when he's got, let's say he wins this game and then he goes to another Super Bowl. You know, we're like, that conversation was so idiotic. I don't understand why people were having that. You know, it's this rush to judgment, this rush to cement a legacy before a cat has even finished with his career. It's just, you know, preposterous to me.
Yeah, and I mean, can we cool it on the whole, well, he would have won 2 Super Bowls with 2 different teams? I'm a big variable guy, and I know why Peyton Manning is on the verge of winning 2 Super Bowls with 2 different teams. It's not like he went Kurt Warner and went to complete grease fire in both situations. Or it's not like he was a coach that was able to build up two different teams. This second go-around, let's be honest, Peyton Manning sat on the sidelines and had his own sweepstakes and got to hand-pick the team he was going to go to, and he picked the most loaded team of all that bunch. I don't want to take too much away from Peyton Manning, but the fact that he would have won two Super Bowls with two different teams, I don't think should add to his legacy at all because of the fact that he was in a position of pretty much being in the catbird seat and going to the Denver Broncos.
Exactly. He had nothing to do with, you know, he planted himself on this roster. He knew what he was doing. It's not a situation where he was drafted by the Colts and sort of built that team and was there from the beginning. He came in at the perfect time and has excelled as any good QB should be with this talent he has around him.
He basically pulled a Phil Jackson.
Exactly.
Yes.
He's like,
yes.
He's like, hey, I ain't going to no scrub. So, all right, here it is. Time to put your money where your mouth is. We got a so-called expert out there, Big Nasty. We have an esteemed writer in Marcus Vandenberg and myself, and we are going to put our Super Bowl picks in stone. Give you the lock of the week. If you're a degenerate gambler, go ahead and listen to this podcast and run to Vegas as quickly as you can or call your bookie. And we're going to start with Alfred. Who wins and what? I don't need an exact score, but at least give me a margin.
I'm going to go 22-16 Seahawks.
Ooh.
Peyton Manning throws an interception on the last drive into the arms of Richard Sherman.
Yes.
And when they ask Richard Sherman, you've just won the Super Bowl. What are you going to do? He goes crazy, and they have to cut to the announcer.
Don't talk to me about mediocre quarterbacks like Peyton Manning.
I'm going to see Mickey Mouse. Don't talk to me about mediocre mascots like Goofy.
I'm not going to Magic Mountain. Don't talk to me about Magic Mountain. Shout out to Magic Mountain. So Alfred's going 22-16 for Seattle. Marcus, who you got?
24-21 Seahawks. Pete Carroll completes the comeback. He wins his title. Pete. Let's go, Pete.
See, I think I like Marcus's prediction a little bit better than Alfred's, but I think it's going to be more high scoring than that.
Really?
Yeah, I just have a feeling that it's going to be a tight game, nip and tuck, but something's going to break. You know, maybe it's after halftime when Bruno Mars and the Red Hot Chili Peppers get through singing. Maybe there'll be another power outage. But I have a feeling Denver's going to come out with some fire. And as much as I like Seattle, it's a win-win either way. Either Peyton Manning gets another ring or we get a black quarterback that gets a ring. And you know, I'd love to see that for Russell Wilson and those boys. But like I said, defense wins championships, but points wins games. And I think I'm going to go with Denver to win this game. As far as a score, I'm going to go. I'll go 30 for Denver, and oh, 17 Seattle.
Wow. 30-17
Denver is my prediction. Because I just don't think Seattle's got a wonderful defense, but they don't have the type of offense that scores points quickly. They're the type of offense where Marshawn Lynch is going to run that ball down your throat. I'm not intimidated by Golden Tate or any of these receivers that they have. You know, they're quality, but they're not game changers like Wes Welker or Demaryius Thomas or even Eric Decker. And I think the Denver Broncos have that ability to score quickly. And, you know, we saw that against the Patriots. Like, they can put some points on the board rather quickly. And so I'm going to go Denver 30, Seattle 17.
I mean, I wouldn't be too shocked if this was that much in Denver's favor, because you have to consider that, yes, as great as Richard Sherman is, let's say he does shut down Demaryius Thomas, which I don't think you can shut down Demaryius Thomas, but if he does, then Peyton Manning's got all kinds of weapons to go to. And as you get down that cornerback depth chart, even for a deep team like Seattle, it gets a little dicey. And Peyton Manning could have his way. Whether you got Eric Decker or Wes Walker, those guys can go off just as much as Demaryius can.
And let's not forget, you know, Peyton Manning, if he's not the most athletic cat, but I heard something today. I think it was Justin Tuck. It was like Peyton Manning's athleticism comes from his preparation, meaning he doesn't have to have that great 40 time. He doesn't have to be a scrambler. But because he knows what your defense is going to do, he can get rid of the ball quickly. He knows how to pick you apart. And he's had a week to check out this Seattle defense. He knows how great they are. He knows how stacked that secondary is. But if anybody is going to crack that code, it's going to be Peyton Manning.
That's fair. We'll see. It'll be a good game.
I think so, too. I think, it'll, like I said, even though I got the score a little bit lopsided, I think it's going to be pretty tight most of the game. But I just see Denver being able to pull away, much like they did in that New England game in the second half. So I'm excited. I'm excited. This is I was going to say last year I wasn't really hyped up for the Super Bowl. This year, even though none of my teams are in the game, I am actually looking forward to it. I think there's some interesting storylines. Like I said, if Russell Wilson can be the second black quarterback to win a Super Bowl, and maybe we can put that bogus storyline to bed, Brother Alfred.
Are you talking about quarterbacks cannot win Super Bowls from outside the pocket?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So maybe we can put that storyline to bed. So hope everybody enjoys the Super Bowl. It's going to be exciting. And we'll be back next week to see whose prediction came true. Let me just say, though, if you lose money but going off of any of our picks, this was for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, somebody
come looking for us.
Yeah.
Oh, take the over in the anthem, by the way. Take the over. And take the over in Omaha's as well.
Who's singing the anthem?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I definitely announced it. Let me see.
Anthem. You know, this is also the, what is it, the 10th anniversary of the Janet Jackson?
Oh.
Nipple slip?
It is.
So I wonder if there'll be any wardrobe malfunctions this year.
Renee Fleming. Who's that?
Who?
Renee Fleming.
Man, this is so white.
Renee Fleming is, I guess she's an opera singer, so I guess she's from New York.
She's married to a guy named Rick Ross, so there you go. There's your street cred, people.
Boss. She's going to come out with the anthem. Maybach music.
Richard Lee Ross.
Okay, yeah, she grew up in New York, in Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. So, yeah, she's local
They
girl.
Couldn't get Billy Joel. I know he did, he did it recently, but already in the area.
But I'm sure a lot of people had to turn him down. Like, I'm not going in that blizzard to go sing the national anthem.
Bruce?
And
someone.
She was like 13th on the depth chart.
Man, I've never heard of this woman.
So hopefully we'll have a great game and, it should be fun. So that's going to do it for segment one for the A Block. Coming up next, we got lots of topics left to talk about. NBA, unions, who knows? You might even have a hockey man. We'll see.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man. Yes, I am. I'm the man.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at KOS_POD. That's CosPod on Twitter.
Let's go. Yeah. For those of you that want to know what we're all about, it's like this, y'all. This is 10% luck, 20% skill, 15%.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, powered by Place to Be Nation, your one-stop spot for the best in sports, pop culture news. Fellas, we got to get into some round ball because as much as we've been focused on the NFL, the NBA has been doing work and has been very intriguing thus far in the season. You know, you got KD going ham, the Pacers bringing home the bacon, and if the playoffs started today, the Bobcats would be in, and that's no baloney. So where you want to start, Big Nasty?
Not with the Bobcats, please.
We want to bury the lead?
Bobcat radio here.
No, we could start with KD versus LeBron, which I think is kind of comical. I don't think any stock should be put in this matchup other than the fact that all this proved tonight that Kevin Durant and the Oklahoma Thunder beat the Miami Heat at home. All that proved is that Kevin Durant is the hottest player in the NBA right now in the regular season. LeBron's legacy is so tied to this run with the Miami Heat, where all they are expected to do is win a championship. They can't get there and lose. It's championship or bust. Spoelstra's job, LeBron's legacy, Wade's legacy, they're all tied to a championship. So they really kind of sleepwalked throughout the regular season, even though LeBron did outscore Kevin Durant tonight. Kevin Durant is still the hottest player in the NBA. I don't know what that means. I think it means that LeBron's NBA MVP dynasty is over for now, but Kevin Durant looks great.
Couple of things. I've heard a lot of people say, "Oh, this has been an amazing stretch," which it has been. But we forget about what Kobe Bryant did just 7 years ago now.
Yeah.
In the March of 2007, where he had I think 4 or 5 50-point games in a month span. But this has been the most impressive month of basketball since that point, and I think you know Durant's really cementing himself as a MVP candidate, finally. I wonder what it would take for LeBron to end that run. And I think LeBron has taken a slight decline. Not his fault. I just think they're sort of in this whole let's get to the playoffs routine, which they should be after 2 straight trips or 3 straight trips to the finals. And Durant has taken this game to another level thanks to Westbrook being out. And it's going to be hard for him to not win MVP this year based on, I mean, his numbers are 51% shooting from the field, averaging 31 points a game, almost 8 rebounds a game, 5 assists. He's just really taking his game to the next level, and it's been really fun to watch Durant this month.
Yeah, and in 2002, we forget, Kobe Bryant had a string of 9 straight 40-point games with the Los Angeles Lakers. And I think that might qualify as more impressive than what Kevin Durant is doing right now, but it's impressive for Kevin Durant because he's doing everything right now, from points to assists to rebounds.
And I don't know what Kobe's record was during that 40-point stretch, but I know when
they only lost once. They're 8-1.
Okay, so it's similar to what Oklahoma City's doing now, but I know that stretch in 2007 when the Lakers were trash, that the Lakers were losing and Kobe was just getting his, yeah. And that was it, so. That's been another impressive thing, too, is that Oklahoma City has been winning since Westbrook's been out, which is going to be scary for the rest of the league come June because this team looks to be a lot better than it did last year. And the young guys, Jeremy Lamb, Perry Jones III, Steven Adams, they've really been stepping up off the bench and it provided them with some extra depth they didn't have last year.
Yeah, because I think last year they were suffering from that loss of James Harden. And now, you know, you're starting to see these young guys step up. But Alfred mentioned, you know, the matchup between the Thunder and the Heat. And, you know, let's not take it for granted, fellas, that the Heat are going to be the representative from the Eastern Conference because the Pacers are for real. Paul George, Granger, Stevenson, Herbert, those boys. I still think I'd make the Heat the favorite. You know, to beat a man, you got to beat the man, and they're still the defending champs. But Indiana looks for real.
They do, and what's especially scary about them, I went to a Lakers game a couple nights ago to see the Pacers-Lakers. Pacers played one of the worst games they've had all season. Paul George couldn't make anything. and they looked terrible, and they still were able to pull away from the Lakers at the end and beat them by 15. Granted, the Lakers are a bad team, but this is what great teams do, is they're able to find a way to win even if they're having an off night. And the Indiana Pacers, I know the Heat are sleepwalking through the season, but the Pacers are on a mission as well. They're not necessarily mailing this in or trying to get healthy for the playoffs, but they are a very young, deep, talented team that I really do think they're going to come out of the East, to be honest. I hate to say it, but I think we might get Pacers in the Thunder. God forbid a Pacers-Spurs NBA final, because I don't think a single person would watch that outside of San Antonio and Indiana. But the Pacers look like they have unfinished business, and that I think that makes them more dangerous.
I think that at some point Miami's starting to realize that, hey, you know, the two seed's probably not good enough. You probably need to go for that one seed, and I expect them to go on a run similar to what they did last year, because I think it's going to come down to a game seven. And having that home court advantage against Indiana will be the difference for Miami. If they're, you know, having to travel to Indiana for Game 7, that could really toss them in the end for them trying to coast through the regular season.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the Spurs, Alfred. They've looked strong, but they've been kind of feasting on those lower-tier teams. They have an abysmal record when it comes to the top teams. We saw them in that game against the Thunder last week, and you know, I think San Antonio is going to be in a great position, but I don't see them getting past Oklahoma City in a seven-game series. The other thing, if we want to flip over to the East, I know we made a lot of jokes early on in the season, and they were warranted about the New Jersey Nets, but
Brooklyn,
you know, the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, they may as well have been New Jersey, as pitiful as they were playing, but. The way they have stepped up in January, and granted it's only January, but I think, you know, is Toronto or the Knicks, are they really scaring anybody in that Atlantic division? I think this could easily be a situation where Brooklyn pulls away and wins the division and, you know, maybe gets, you know, a third, fourth, fifth seed somewhere around there going into the playoffs, and maybe they can do something.
I think they absolutely could. This is a team that would be, I think, very dangerous in the playoffs. As long as they stay away from the Pacers and the Heat, they could threaten to go to the championship in the East. Like you said, with Toronto, Atlanta, all these other teams in the East, none of them are going to be as scary as the Brooklyn Nets would be, given their veteran leadership. Jason Kidd is a coach, and the playoffs is going to be kind of dicey, but they're getting it together, and they could be one of these teams that peak at the right time.
Well, here's the problem. They can get up to the 3 seed, so that would buy them one round before they have to face Miami or Indiana. So it'd be cute and all for the Jason Kidd to have this comeback story, but I don't see Brooklyn beating either one of those teams in the playoffs. Do you?
No, not even close.
Not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd be lucky to get past the juggernaut Charlotte Bobcats, who we still need to spend 5 minutes talking about.
Yeah, they're not going to make the playoffs either.
Hey, there's hope, Michael Jordan. This could be Michael's year.
Yeah, what if he comes off the bench for one of those games that we were talking about last year?
Chicago Bulls, last game in the season. Well, they're too good now. That's the problem. They're too good. He messed it up.
Yeah, he did kind of mess that up. But, yeah, that would be great. Like, it'd be like a movie. One game left to get into the playoffs. And, oh, no, somebody's hurt. We got nobody on the bench. And then Michael's like, I can play, and he's out there playing in dress shoes. He can still probably score 5 or 6 points in dress shoes.
Absolutely. I think he can go double digits in dress shoes.
Oh, man. But then I think the union would have something to say about that, about the owner stepping onto the court. But we'll see.
By the way, speaking of the Eastern Conference, did you see who got snubbed from the All-Star game?
No, they announced the reserves today.
Yeah,
huh?
You're asleep. Lance Stevenson got robbed. No Lancelot.
Wow.
DeMar DeRozan took the spot.
Really?
Yeah.
DeMar DeRozan?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess he has had a pretty good year.
So what did Lance do tonight? Triple double.
That's like LaMarcus Aldridge when he snubbed. He went off for 40 points.
He did make the team as a reserve today. Him and Lillard, so. But also Joe Johnson made the team somehow.
Hey, you can't have an all-star team without Joe Johnson.
Jesus Joe made the team. Averaging 15 points a game, Joe Johnson.
Hey, I mean, To be fair, it's kind of slim pickings in the East.
Lance Stephenson. Pitch Lance over Joe Johnson.
Johnson did have that game where he I think went off for 10 threes earlier this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe they turned in their ballots early.
Yeah, they just called it after that. Oh, well, how could he miss it?
Yeah, I'm not sure how he got in, but that's a joke, especially considering Brooklyn is not really – I mean, they're not – I wouldn't call them good. They're better than they were, but tonight it's actually a first-place team, so.
So, finally, I did want to touch on real quick before we get to the – get out here and get to the ringside wrap in the next segment. The big news from college football over this past week was the Union and your boy Kane Coulter, who, you know, I've been very impressed with, you know, of course we knew he was a good player, but just the kind of the leadership that this kid is showing off the field in terms of, you know, being involved with the All Players United movement and now, you know, leading his team in terms of trying to start a union in college football.
Actually, let me try to patch in someone who might be able to speak on this.
Okay.
All right, so we had a special guest here to talk about this whole Northwestern situation. Morgan Campbell returning to the show and a former member of the Northwestern Wildcats. What's up, Morgan?
Hey, Morgan.
I'm good. This is man, who do we beat in basketball? Like, we beat Wisconsin this week. We beat
You're beating the man this week? No, you beat Michigan State.
We beat some ranked teams this year in basketball, and now we have you know, our football players taking this big, big, big historic step. Like, whether or not it even goes anywhere, the step is historic.
What are your thoughts overall on this whole situation with the Union?
Well, this is the way the trend has been going the last few years, right? With more and more agitation for the idea of players getting paid or players getting compensated in something beyond scholarships. There's that, you know, and then with the class action suit led by Ed O'Bannon, you know, against the NCAA and EA Sports. So as college football, you know, with the death of the BCS, becomes a bigger and even bigger and even bigger business, and all these conferences start realigning on the basis of business and broadcast rights instead of on the basis of academics or even competition, there's obviously more and more money to go around. It's not going around to the players. I'm sure we've talked about that before. But again, the other side of the debate is getting so much momentum that something like this, you know, had to happen at some point. And, you know, Northwestern is kind of, you know, an ideal place for that to happen because it's a private school, you know, so it's not subject to all. It's a school, you know, with a higher academic standard than a lot of other, you know, football bowl subdivision schools. So again, while every single person on the team, you know, isn't a Rhodes Scholar, you'll find a lot more critical thinkers on that team than you might find someplace else, and guys who can take the broader view of the situation, you know, and apply their critical thinking skills and come to the conclusion that, you know, the system, no matter where you are in this thing, whether you're at Northwestern or Sam Houston State, the system isn't fair. And, you know, in a lot of ways, athletes are exploited. So Northwestern student athletes are in an ideal situation to do something about it. And a lot of it too is public perception, you know, because they go to Northwestern, like the general public is going to recognize these guys as smart guys, who have thought about this thing instead of, whereas if they were from Ohio State, Florida State, Texas, you know, they might be portrayed as just a bunch of spoiled, dumb jocks who have a lot and simply want more. But coming from Northwestern, the knee-jerk, the initial reaction is to hear these guys out because you realize academically a lot of them do have something on the ball. So it's not as simple just to dismiss them as dumb and spoiled jocks.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because, you know, the court battle will be decided, you know, where it's decided. And, you know, we all know the NCAA can lawyer up with the best of them. But yes. I think the public perception battle is where this thing really is making some waves because for so long, if you brought up the topic of, you know, compensating athletes or, you know, ways to better you know, accommodate these student athletes, you know, the standard argument would be, oh, you know, they're getting tuition, they're getting free room and board, what do they need to be compensated for? But I think now, with the Ed O'Bannon case, with what we saw at Grambling, and with these Northwestern players coming out, I think that, you know, the argument is changing slowly but surely, and the dynamic is not just to automatically go, you know, what do these kids need money for? You know, because I think something as simple as the scholarship, which all of us understand, you know, following sports, that it's a year-to-year thing. Most people think when you get that scholarship, it's 4 years, and that's not the case at all.
Well, I've never understood the question, you know, why do the players need money? Because if you're going to ask why the players need money, why not ask why the coaches need money? You know, why do the people that run the NCAA, why do you guys need money? Why don't we pay you guys in kind? Why don't I say to Nick Saban, instead of I can't remember off the top of my head how much Nick Saban makes, but let's just say for the sake of this discussion that he makes $5 million a year. Why don't I say to Nick Saban, like, listen, we're not going to give you $5 million a year in cash, but we will give you $5 million a year with scholarship, room, and board to use at your convenience during the season, after the season, after retirement. He would say no. Because the point is, you know, I don't have to convince you guys of this, but it's a commercial venture. You know, football at that level, basketball at that level, and the people involved in a commercial venture and the people making the money who make this commercial venture so lucrative deserve to be paid, period. Period. Doesn't matter what they're getting in kind. Because, again, these transactions that take place between there's the schools, the conferences, and the television network, they're not trading in kind goods, right? Northwestern doesn't say, well, I'll send you 800 textbooks if you guys broadcast our games, or you broadcast our games, or you guys pay us, you know, in office supplies and pens, you know, for the privilege of broadcasting our games. No, they exchange cash. So I've never really understood that argument, you know, and I've never understood the questioning of why should players get money. You know, the question is, why shouldn't they? If everyone else is getting money, why shouldn't they?
When it comes to a revolution, an unwritten rule is that a lot of people, a lot of individuals, leaders who start revolutions end up getting crushed, and they end up being martyrs as a step in the process to raise awareness and to complete the revolution. Somebody else has to take over. Are you worried that Northwestern could be seen in the annals of history as, well, they were martyrs, they are the guys who started it, but they weren't able to quite finish?
Much like the 2013 football team.
Well, uh-oh.
Wow.
And no, that was Marcus.
And he knows I support Northwestern, so I can say that, right, Morgan?
I'm not. Some of my best friends are Northwestern graduates.
I wear purple at NABJ to support. Come on.
I think. And what I could see is other schools using this as a negative recruiting tool, right? But at the same time, it could be a positive recruiting tool, right? Like, we're leading the fight to get you guys paid, although I'm not sure you can talk about payment in recruiting. But I could see other schools using it as a negative recruiting tool. In terms of, you know, because it's difficult, again, to – you can't – I don't know what mechanism the NCAA has, you know, to penalize young men for joining a union or joining a group that's affiliated with the union. I don't know what mechanism they have to penalize Northwestern for this. So I don't know. But of course, the NCAA is not afraid to make up rules on the fly.
No, not at all. It's a watchdog commission.
Yeah, so if they all of a sudden outlaw, you know, union membership, and then all of a sudden you have all these Northwestern guys who are on the wrong side of the rule by default, then maybe something can happen. But I don't, it's too hard to speculate for me at this point. Again, what I'm looking at is, you know, where this goes from here. Does this spread to other campuses? And at a certain point, and at what point, you know, again, does the NCAA's stranglehold on college athletics loosen. Because the other thing at play here, too, is that like you see how these teams change conferences, right? Like mm-hmm. Maryland went to the Big Ten. Why? You know, it's a longer travel time, you know, to all these different schools. But they went to the Big Ten because the Big Ten has better media rights deals, and Maryland can get more money from being part of the Big Ten. You know, games on the Big Ten Network, ABC, ESPN, on down the line. And they would be in another conference. But at a certain point, like, and I've had this discussion too with, like, on the old All Balls Don't Bounce podcast with Will and with Bomani. When you look at the economics of college sport, like, these power conferences could get to the point where they don't need the NCAA, right? Like, why do the SEC, Big Ten, ACC, Big 12, why do they need the NCAA? Right? They could very easily create their own college football super league, right? So I find, in these schools, as they change conferences, you know, they're exercising a greater degree of autonomy in making decisions not necessarily what's best for the NCAA, but what's based on what's best for their own financial interest. So, you know, the NCAA's stranglehold over control of college athletics is potentially, you know, being threatened on the player front, but again, also on the conference front. So what I'm waiting to see is what the NCAA's counter moves are, because again, there's much too much money tied up in the NCAA having control over all this. But at the same time, everyone else recognizes too that there's a big pie that they want their piece of. So that's what I'm interested to see, is how the NCAA reacts to this. What are their counter moves going to be to control these players, to keep this movement from spreading? And what are their counter moves going to be, you know, against schools and conferences who at some point might decide that they don't need the NCAA either?
Before we let you go, just a twit boxing question, because we're both watching Victor Ortiz fight for the last time, hopefully. This is it for Victor, right?
Ego!
Is this it for Victor?
It's gotta be, right?
Oh, who knows? You know, the thing about Victor is the best thing that ever happened to Victor Ortiz was getting knocked out by Floyd Mayweather the way he did. Right? Is Victor Ortiz on Dancing with the Stars if that fight ends in any other way?
Nope.
Right? If he loses, you don't see Canelo Alvarez on Dancing with the Stars.
Not yet.
You know, getting taken to school over 12 rounds. You don't see Robert Guerrero on Dancing with the Stars. And somehow Victor Ortiz wound up on Dancing with the Stars because he got knocked out like a sucker against Floyd Mayweather. And that should have been his moment to retire, because, you know, he could have, crossed over into that guy who's just famous for being famous. I don't know where he goes from here. I don't know what else he's going to do for a living besides box. I don't know if he can re-enter that sphere of celebrity for celebrity's sake. Something tells me he can't, because he was just fighting on Fox Sports, you know, as opposed to HBO. So this is where Victor Ortiz's boxing career is at, but it's also a reflection of where his profile is.
Friday Night Fights is nuts, man. That's a net stop.
Say that again?
I said Friday Night Fights is a net stop for him.
I think where he might. Well, you say that, but I think it's true. It's true. Friday Night Fights, Showbox, where he becomes a gatekeeper, right? Where he fights a guy, he starts fighting guys a cut below Luis Colosso. He starts fighting guys. He becomes the guy, like Bert Cooper was back in the day, who you fought to see whether or not you were a contender. If you can beat Ortiz, you might be a contender. If you can't beat Ortiz, you're clearly not a contender. I think that's the role he winds up playing, you know, in boxing's ecosystem, because he didn't take full advantage of the celebrity Floyd Mayweather gave him by knocking him into next week.
So basically, he's like a punch-out character then. He's like the dude you got to face before you get the safe code.
He's pissed at Honda?
Yeah.
I was going to say he's pissed at Honda. If you piss and Honda, you don't have a prayer, but if you can beat Piss and Honda, then you have a chance against King Hippo and the rest of them. We know what, back to Northwestern. Well, I can't, because this is one of these things that And well, you know, and I know about this because I went to Northwestern. But the other thing, you know, that's really interesting about this to me, and I wonder if Kane Coulter and his teammates are, you know, aware of this history, because there is a precedent for athlete activism at Northwestern. If you know the history of that school, then you'll know about the May 3rd, 4th Agreement, which was signed in 1968. It was after a takeover of the student accounts office. Basically, all the black kids on campus, there was only 110 of them.
Wow.
Right? Took over this office, you know, and went to administration with this list of demands. You know, one of it was increased, you know, it was an African-American studies department. Increased African American enrollment. I think the demand was, you know, keep it at 10%. And you know, a lot of the people at the center of that protest, of the sit-in that led to the May 3rd, 4th Agreement that led to the Department of African American Studies being established, a lot of people at the center of that protest were football players, mainly because it was a numbers game, right? There's only 110 black kids on campus at the time. If the football team has 100 guys, then 50 of them are black, 40 of them are black, whatever it is, you know, a significant percentage of the student body, black student body at the time, was football players. So a lot of football players involved in the sit-in that led to the May 3rd, 4th Agreement, you know, which led to, you know, some significant changes in the complexion of that campus. So, you know, this isn't the first instance of activism at Northwestern. I'm glad to see it, you know, in a lot of ways, because it's my alma mater. It's a subject, you know, and an issue that's close to my heart. But again, I'm interested to see where it goes, and I'm interested to see what the NCAA's counter moves are, because they're not just going to sit back and let the free laborers start grabbing at the cash piles. There will be, you know, consequences.
Before you take off, please plug Sportonomics and let the people in the States know about Sportonomics.
So what I'm doing right now is I work in the business department at the Toronto Star, but I cover the sports industry. You know, so I write, and I also have a weekly video series, publishes every Monday online, called Sportonomics. So I work with a videographer named Anne Marie Jackson, and every week we just explore a different aspect of the sports industry through these videos. So we did a video, you know, we've done interviews with, you know, the people that run the concessions at the Air Canada Center, you know, to see how they get ready for game night. We've done stuff with, you know, independent business people, you know, an independent hockey equipment manufacturer, an independent running retailer, things like this. We did a story with geneticists and people who are trying to develop tests that use an athlete's DNA to figure out what nutrition they will need for peak athletic performance. So in December, I took a DNA test, and then this week's episode, you'll see my results. So that's what I do every Monday. Most times there's a written element too, but every Monday video drops, Sportonomics, thestar.com/business/sportonomics. That's where I am.
Cool. Thanks, man. Thank you for jumping on at the last minute here. And we'll catch up soon, man.
All right, we'll see you guys.
All right. Appreciate it, Louie.
No problem.
Later, man.
Ciao.
That's what we do. We just bring special guests. You don't even know. Sometimes Alfred and I don't even know. That's what we do. So that was Morgan Campbell. We are the Kings of Sport. And coming up next, don't you touch that dial. Don't you touch that laptop. Because we're going to talk about the wild world of professional wrestling, including somebody possibly leaving the WWE and somebody coming in to TNA. It's going to be good.
More Kings of Sport right after this.
Here we go back. This is the moment. Tonight is the night. We'll fight till it's over. So we brought our hands.
We've always said the Kings of Sport was the best podcast around, but now the reviews are in and the people have spoken. Here's what you had to say about the show. This is a sports podcast for the people, by the people. There are no old guys talking about the good old days. These are brothers that are connected to what's going on now. They bring you the latest information as well as comparing current events to historical ones. If there is one sports podcast that you need to listen to, make it this one. This is a very good show with three brilliant co-hosts who keep it real. Younger guys with great minds for sports. They have differing opinions and back it up with facts and figures. Always entertaining and an enjoyable listen. I am down with the Kings. The Kings of Sport is the best thing going on the internet. These guys rock. Give them a listen. You won't be disappointed. So there you have it. But you don't have to take their word for it. Find out for yourself. Listen to the Kings of Sport and make up your own mind. We guarantee we're the best show around. And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
And welcome back to the Kings of Sport. Marcus, Nasty, Nate, and we had a nice little Royal Rumble discussion following that pay-per-view, which was a pay-per-view that will forever be defined by the Pennsylvania crowd absolutely taking over when they learned that their hero, Daniel Bryan, was not included in the Royal Rumble match. We continued that discussion because it looks like WWE may be listening to them. Raw was booked as a show that was apparently a reaction to how the fans reacted to Daniel Bryan not being included in the Royal Rumble, with the show kicking off with Daniel Bryan and the Authority, Daniel Bryan saying, "You're holding me down. I can't believe I wasn't in the Royal Rumble," this, that, and the other. So now Daniel Bryan has a shot at the Elimination Chamber. And he goes from having a 1 in 30 chance of winning the Royal Rumble to essentially having a 1 in 6 chance at representing himself and the Yes Movement at WrestleMania. Marcus, is the excitement back? Are you back to being excited with the WWE and Daniel Bryan and WrestleMania now that he is in the Elimination Chamber?
No, because I think if he's going to win the title, he's not going to win at the Chamber. That would be. See, this is the problem with the internet. They're upset that Daniel Bryan isn't in the Rumble and isn't winning the Rumble. But if Bryan wins the Chamber, then people will be upset and saying, "Oh, well, why did they do it now in that Mania? Why did they ruin that moment on, you know, a February pay-per-view?" So I don't see him winning this pay-per-view. At the very best outcome, I should see him somehow getting himself maybe in a three-way for the title, but I don't see him winning this pay-per-view. It just seems like it would be a waste to do the flip here. I could see them flipping to maybe Cena beating Orton in the Chamber in order to get Orton out that match with Batista, but I don't see Bryan winning.
Yeah, and that's the inherent problem with the Elimination Chamber. I mean, we just had a pay-per-view where 30 guys fought for a spot, you know, for a title shot. And now, you know, these guys that lost or these guys that weren't even in the Rumble match are getting their shot. You know, I've never liked the Elimination Chamber following up the Rumble, you know, but it is what it is. I agree with Marcus in that, you know, they could call the audible. I think it's too early. I think it's too soon. I think, you know, if Bryan is going to win the title, then I think Batista has to take it from Orton, and then that's how you get there. Otherwise, you know, I'm still in the position that I was when we did the show after the Rumble. Like, I still have a feeling that they'll be stubborn and they'll drag the fans kicking and screaming to an Orton Batista match at Mania.
Yeah, and it's a good point that you brought up, Nate, in that the Elimination Chamber with a one title setting, I think, does not make sense. If you really think about competition and the earn and system that WWE has, to where, okay, you had a chance at the Royal Rumble, but now that you didn't get that chance, you're going to get another chance and a better chance, really, statistically, at winning the title as a consolation, I got it when there was like a world title and a WWE title, and those who didn't win the WWE title would be relegated to the Elimination Chamber. But it just doesn't make sense from that standpoint. As far as Daniel Bryan being in the Elimination Chamber, I'm also with Nate in that I think they are going to be stubborn. WWE has never really been a company. Yes, they do listen to their fans. Don't listen to people who say, oh, they're not listening to their fans, they don't care about us. But if Vince gets something in his mind, and if that company wants to do something, whether it be push Daniel Bryan, whether it be a certain main event at WrestleMania, they're going to go all the way with it. And they know that these same fans who are going to be complaining, the really passionate fans who are revolting against their product, they're going to show up to the building, they're going to buy the product. And Batista also translates to those casual fans. If you saw the ratings, he did a great number. As far as a winner of the Elimination Chamber, I know you guys, okay, John Cena is a possibility. Do you both envision Randy Orton dropping the title at the Elimination Chamber? We'll start with Nate.
I definitely could see that. You know, I don't think Cena's going to take it, though, because as much as it makes sense for Cena to have the title and be the guy going into WrestleMania, it also doesn't make sense. You know, I think the Wyatt feud doesn't need a title behind it. And that's the other thing, you know, about the, I think the Wyatts might get paired up with the Shield, the Elimination Chamber. So it's kind of like, you know, where, what part will they play in deciding who wins or loses that match? So I don't see Cena winning it, but I also could very easily see Randy Orton dropping the belt in that match, in a match where he doesn't have to pin.
And that match is happening at the pay-per-view, which is why I was confused about the whole Cena thing, because they seem to be moving away from Cena now to the Shield versus the Wyatt. So I'm not sure what's going on with them, but I could see Orton losing. But I noticed I was on WWE website today, and they have the top stories about Batista and him getting his purple belt in jiu-jitsu. So, I mean, another option they can go is try to build up Batista as this believable babyface and try to get him back. I mean, to be fair, we saw what he did with the numbers in terms of when he came back in his debut. And, yeah, he got shattered at the Rumble, but it wasn't his fault. That was sort of like a result of Daniel Bryan. So I'm not sure if he is over the fans or not. So I think if they can build him up as a legitimate babyface, then that match can still work at Mania if it's not closing the show.
Well, you talked about the top story on WWE.com. The top story in professional wrestling right now that you're not going to read about on WWE.com is one CM Punk who essentially took his ball and went home. TMZ ran with the story of CM Punk quitting the WWE, and there have since been a lot of stories and updates and backstage reports reported throughout all the dirt sheets of CM Punk having discussions and disagreements with Vince McMahon and WWE management. According to the reports, he did not agree with the fact that a match against Triple H would be considered a main event type program. In his interview with Ariel Helwani, you could tell he was clearly burnt out and he was clearly frustrated with the WWE product, and now he's gone. So, Marcus, amidst creative struggles, I know you've been somebody who's been frustrated with WWE's creative as of late. Do you think this is the right move on CM Punk's part?
It's hard to say. I have a real problem with people, especially with athletes, who don't honor their contracts. If you're going to sign up for a contract, honor it. You know, you signed up to be here until July, be here until July. I understand that it's not ideal. I understand that it might suck, but I think you are, as much as it sounds cheesy, you're obligated to the WWE universe to live out your contract and you know, entertain the fans. Now, whether this is a work or not, I don't know. I really can't tell, which is credit on their part if this is a work, because it leaves the fans in doubt. But if this isn't a work, and if this is really CM Punk losing a smile and going home, then it's really disappointing that he would actually go about this way, considering he's almost done with his contract. And I mean, no one would begrudge him for walking away in July, but for him to walk away before the biggest pay-per-view of the year, that's a little fucked up.
Yeah, I was going to say, he gone? Question mark? Because, yeah, you know, like Marcus, I'm cynical, I'm jaded. I happen to think this is a work, and you know, if he doesn't show up at WrestleMania, then I'm like, okay, then it's real. But until then, I believe that it's a work. I think that, you know, this is an interesting case study because, you know, CM Punk for a long time was the outsider. And now you could argue that he's an establishment guy in the WWE. And for him to walk away from his contract because he has a disagreement with creative or a disagreement with the way his character is being portrayed or the angles or storylines they're putting him in, you know, that's silly. That's childish. You know, there's a lot of guys on that roster that I would say, by all means, man, go ahead and walk away, Kofi Kingston being one of them, you know. But for a guy that's been treated as well as Punk has, I don't think this is the right move. And also the other thing that kind of, you know, makes me scratch my head with this whole thing is with Punk, you have a guy that, you know, is a media darling. You know, I was talking to Marcus before the show. He's been on The Talking Dead a number of times. He's not a mainstream star to the level of a Rock or a Cena or a Stone Cold, but he's arguably one of their biggest stars right now. And the fact that, let's say this is a work, I think it's counterproductive because the only people that are going to be interested in this are the 10%. And they're not happy with you anyway because of the Daniel Bryan stuff. And if, you know, you're just playing with them with this Punk thing, it's like, you know, you're biting the hand that feeds you because this 10%, like you mentioned, Alfred, they're coming to the show regardless. Whether they bitch, moan, complain, cheer, applaud, whatever, they're there each and every week. And, you know, you can only piss them off so many times.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a work at all. It just at his core, CM Punk is anti-authority. And if you look at the fact that he was booked and advertised on all these shows and they had to remove him, they had to replace him with Sheamus, it would just be counterproductive to think something like this up. Like, oh, let's just take him off the road and replace him. We'll piss off all these customers. If this is a work, I think there's going to be a lot of angry customers with the WWE who would be due refunds for what they're doing. And with CM Punk, yeah, this is the wrong way to handle this situation. Granted, they made a creative to-do about it the last time this came around in 2011, and they did have a very compelling storyline out of CM Punk threatening to leave the WWE. But with him now having disagreements and deciding that he just doesn't want to be at WrestleMania, I think it is childish. I don't think this is going to go a long way in proving his point. The thing that is kind of discouraging about this is that when he does come back, I think he might, there'll be water under the bridge, and they might be wary of how they push him, knowing his diva-like tendencies. And I think it could benefit him and him alone in that they'll think, well, if we don't give CM Punk XYZ, he'll leave, and we don't want to be put in that position. But he right now, I think, is in a more favorable position for leaving based on his situation of not needing the money, not needing the WWE, and really being burnt out. I think they will continue to lobby to try to get him back.
You mentioned the Ariel interview where he discussed a possible run in MMA. Dana White had asked about it during the media scrum before 169, and he said, regarding the Punk, I was with him all night in Chicago, and he never said anything to me about it. I like him. He's a great guy. It's a little late to get in the game. Who knows if he can fight? So part of me wonders if this is all part of an elaborate work with the UFC somehow. Between all the stuff with Lesnar, Dana mentioned Vince in the network this week. He's mentioned Punk. He's mentioned Lesnar on TMZ today. It just seems like there's a lot of crossover between Dana White and the WWE, and I just wonder if this is part of a bigger plan.
UFC invasion angle?
Yeah, what would be the payoff here? What's the match? Like, what would they be going after if they include the UFC?
I think the payoff would somehow involve Lesnar fighting under the UFC while he's under WWE contract, and then the return, I guess, would be, I don't know. The only guy on the UFC roster who could probably work an angle.
It's got to be Chael, right?
No.
I mean, just in terms of the promos, the character.
You would want him if there was ever a working relationship. I don't think there is, but if there ever was, Chael would be one of the top guys in WWE.
I think Josh Barnett would be the guy. Because Barnett wrestles.
Oh, yes.
He's at the background.
He has wrestling background.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it just, something's up. And it wouldn't surprise me sooner or later something if they did work out something with Lesnar so he did still do MMA and WWE. Because I think both companies would benefit from the promotion, from the extra promotion, so I don't know. It just seems – the timing seems weird. And we saw before UFC 168 when White was kind of coy about Brock Lesnar and if he was showing up. And I don't know. Something's up.
I still want to see a UFC invasion because that would be the greatest invasion story since Battle Dome invaded WCW.
Yeah, look at both companies now.
Shout out to Battle Dome, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a rated show.
It wouldn't help UFC at all. UFC, I don't think, would stand to gain anything from this. Yes, they'd get extra exposure, but there already is that crossover. And UFC, what differentiates them from WWE is they're the real product, and they go with wins and losses, whatever. And just even being associated with WWE in a creative capacity will raise suspicion with casual fans as to whether or not UFC's real. And the last thing they want is those blurred lines.
Well,
you know, they want blurred lines for the right reasons, just not people thinking that UFC's a work.
But if it's just eliminate pun, say if they let Lesnar fight in both, they would benefit from having him wrestle in UFC, or not wrestle, fight in UFC again. I mean, we saw what he did his first run in terms of the numbers. I mean, they could use someone like a Lesnar to help their pay-per-view business at the moment.
Oh, exactly. And, I mean, one of the concerns with Brock Lesnar was that he was coming from WWE, and he had to fight a lot of that skepticism that, okay, you got this WWE wrestler in there, and that's how he was marketed. Thankfully, Brock Lesnar is a freak of nature, and he was able to go in there with his wrestling background in NCAA and dominate while he was healthy. But I think that's an outlier. That's an exception to the rule. I don't think that any old person, there should be too much crossover between wrestling and UFC. And I don't think Dana White would want that crossover. He does openly respect Vince McMahon for his promotional know-how, but I don't think he likes the idea of professional wrestling and UFC being one and the same.
Maybe Dana will be a secret investor for the WWE.
That could happen, right? He could show up on WWE TV and then and they could just cut out. Real quick, let's touch on that. What Nate is referring to is this secret investor storyline that TNA has going on. Tonight it was paid off, and by now you've heard, so it's not a spoiler, but MVP was revealed as the secret investor in a very cool. TNA went off the air immediately after, but that's what we have now in TNA, MVP. We've had better, more established superstars show up in TNA and not move the needle, but creatively, what do you think about this angle, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear. It's not going to make a difference one way or the other in the ratings, most likely. They're still going to get that million, around that million viewers that they always get, whether they're good or bad. But I like MVP. I've always thought that he was underutilized in the WWE. The guy can talk. The guy has a good mind. You know, he created the character. I just don't know if I like him in an authority role. I'm tired of authority angles, whether it's WWE or TNA. I think authority angles are getting played out. But if you're going to do an authority angle, MVP should not be the investor. He should be, you know, the top man for the authority guy in terms of being an active wrestler. That being said, if anybody is going to play the babyface authority figure, I'd much rather see it be a fresh guy like MVP than, you know, a retread.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not gonna wrestle, then it's I think they're wasting him in terms of what they're booking. But we'll see what happens with him. We were at the SummerSlam party, the one that Alfred got stuck at the door, and the guy I was with, John Murray, is friends of MVP, and he asked Triple H. He said, "Hey, look, you know, why aren't you? Have you considered giving MVP a call or something along those lines?" And Triple H's response was basically, "Oh, we're trying to push younger superstars and." Looking back,
like Batista.
Yeah, looking back at things now, New Age Outlaws, Kevin Nash, Batista. I guess MVP's a little too old, so. I'm surprised he never got a look back from the WWEs. I think he would fit in well. But I'm happy to see that he's back on TV in the States.
Yeah, and maybe who knows what the situation was behind closed doors, because all I've heard is that he had a very positive relationship with WWE upon his exit, and the door was always open for him to return. He was very close with John Laurinaitis, but I don't know how much stroke he has these days. And with MVP, and this is one of the things I like about TNA now that he's with TNA, is that TNA always has an end game. The execution may not make sense, and it may not be very good payoff-wise, but they always have a long-term plan mapped out for what they want out of the wrestlers and out of their storylines. And the fact that MVP's returning on TV and he's in a suit, there's going to be a build before his first match, which I completely agree with. And so hopefully, if they give this away, whether it be on a TV show or on a pay-per-view, there is going to be some meaning behind this, And MVP is going to, I mean, I don't think he's going to move the needle because nobody does in TNA, but hopefully creatively we're able to get some more stability with TNA.
And I think he is like a guy that, like I said, you know, he's not going to, at least in TNA, I don't think he's going to allow himself to be screwed over by creative. I think he has enough of a voice and, you know, let's be real with it. You know, they need him more than he needs them, you know, because he could pick up a check anyway. You know, if he wanted to, he could, I'm sure he could go back to Japan or ROH would be happy to have him, you know. But I think his character will be consistent. And you need, as much as I hate authority storylines, you need a counterpoint to Dixie Carter. And so if you're going to have it, like I said, I'd rather have it be a guy like MVP than, you know, to bring Foley back or to bring Hogan back, or somebody we've seen over and over again.
At least TNA didn't wait for WWE to make a move. They're finally going their own direction and not trying to mirror what's going on in the other promotion. So that's a positive step for them.
Oh, unless there is eventually an authority stable with MVP and Dixie Carter, which can happen. But, you know, you got MVP coming, you got CM Punk going. But unlike CM Punk, we're not going anywhere. We'll just be right back with segment four.
Nah, I quit.
One, two, you hear the clock ticking. Tick, tock, you're about to stop living. Tick, tock, I want you to remember me. Tick, tock, but the dead don't have no memory.
I'm coming!
Nobody can stop me, nobody can hold me, nobody control me.
I'm coming!
I'm here to do my thing, I'm here to bring the pain, I'm never ever gonna change. Like Tropicana, I got the juice. All for the leash, they let the dog loose. Don't make me call up the crew. Now they getting scared when I call up a truth. I'm the one like Neo, cocky like Teal. Nobody can guard me like I'm shooting the freak though.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, placetobenation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today, plus be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
What's that?
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show. I break down matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, placetobenation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all of WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. Place to Be Nation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best in comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad Show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also our friend Dave at TWFnews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for another week. But before we do, you know we got to give the people what they want. We got to give the people what they need. And what you want and what you need is ratchetness. And that can come from the world of sports, the world of entertainment, or maybe a mixture of both. And there has been nobody more ratchet in 2014 than one Justin Bieber. Now, this kid went from being America's heartthrob to America's pain in the ass, and apparently he is a nuisance in more than one country. And Brother Marcus, can you tell us what the Biebs has gotten himself into this time?
Oh, Justin, another week, another court appearance for Justin Bieber, because he was charged with criminal assault on Wednesday in his hometown of Toronto for a assault that took place in December with a limo driver. Reportedly, he actually assaulted the guy. When the story first came out, he was accused of calling for the assault. But now sources are saying that he actually assaulted the guy from behind. So, classy. So if you're keeping track at home with the Justin Bieber drinking game for court cases, he's got three different cases now in three different cities. He's got one in L.A., for the whole egging of his neighbor. He's at the incident in Miami with the arrest, and now he's at the criminal assault in Toronto. So, 3 for 3.
The Justin Bieber crime world tour rolls on.
And, by the way, also released yesterday, or today, was they had the toxicology reports from the DUI arrest, and Bieber was under the influence of alcohol, marijuana, and Xanax when he got stopped in Miami.
If I was a pothead, I'd let you know, beating up cab drivers everywhere I go. If I was a pothead.
If you were.
First of all, this is a crazy thing. Like, how bad does it have to be a Toronto cabbie? Like, first of all, you got Rob Ford calling you all kind of ethnic slurs, and now you got Justin Bieber hitting you with that sucker punch from behind.
If ever there was a Toronto cabbie boot camp, I mean, or a cabbie boot camp in general, they should just send them to Toronto, see if they hold up, and then you could make it anywhere.
Oh, man, this is ridiculous. Like, what was it, yesterday, Marcus, where it came out that people had signed a petition on whitehouse.gov, like over 100,000 signatures to get Justin Bieber kicked out of the country?
Yep.
Like, public opinion has certainly turned on this dude.
It's, Obama has to address that, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. They have to look at it.
It's awesome.
You know, we joked, but I think one of these mornings we're going to wake up and we're going to check TMZ and find out Justin Bieber's passed away from either drugs or reckless driving or just something. He's on that path, unfortunately. And unless he, you know, does... Remember when Lindsay Lohan was the story of the week in terms of her dealing with her issues, and she finally went to rehab, and she's sort of been out of the scene. So unless he decides to take his life seriously and get some help for whatever issues he's going through, he's going to end up, unfortunately, on TMZ for the wrong reason one day.
That's a good point. Like, usually when we hear these kind of stories, it's with the, you know, young female celebrities like Lindsay Lohan, like Amanda Bynes. You know, you don't really see dudes going ham like this, especially, you know, quote-unquote clean-cut white dudes, clean-cut white Canadian dudes. And this kid is like, there's a sense of entitlement. There's a sense of, you know, I can do whatever I want. You can't touch me. There's a sense of, you know, granted he's only 19, but that's – there's a real immaturity. And it's like even the people around him that were positive influences, like I think even Usher's kind of like backed away from that association.
The thing – I think part of the problem is that Justin Bieber was so clean cut and sheltered and he had a stage mom who told him how great he was his whole life. And once he got exposed, especially to that hip-hop culture, I just think in order to feel more accepted, he felt that as he got older, he needed to shed this label as this teeny bopper. So he has completely gone the other way. And part of me feels like there's somewhere in the back of Justin Bieber's mind that's saying, even though you see me in all these news stories and whatnot, this is building my street cred. And that he's going to keep going on this path until, I mean, hopefully it's not going to be too late. But I really do think that part of this is going to be validation for Justin Bieber saying that he's some bad boy when really he's just coming off as another troubled young star.
And he's only 19. He turns 20 in a few weeks, so I'm curious to see what he does for his birthday. If he tries to keep it under wraps or keep it low key, or if he decides to just say fuck it and just go out and try to
start sucker punching everybody.
Yeah, but I mean, he's gonna punch the wrong dude and get his ass beat. Number one, I mean, you can't keep doing this stuff without. Yeah, I'm sure he rolls with security and stuff, but
yeah.
He's gonna find himself at some point isolated where it's just him. And the public, and the public's going to win.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it. I would say that, you know, it's a bad look, and you know, it's something that he can never recover from. But, I mean, this is celebrity. This is America, and we seem to have a tolerance for forgiving, especially our famous people. And so in terms of Justin Bieber, if he's able to turn this around and get back into good graces, I would say, you know, never say never.
Well, I mean, if you compare what he's been through compared to Chris Brown, what would you consider the more damaging rap-free reputation, what Chris Brown went through or what Bieber's going through now?
Oh, I think definitely Chris Brown's reputation has been damaged because he will forever be linked, no matter how successful he is, he'll forever be linked to, oh, you're the guy who beat Rihanna, and there's always going to be the Chris Brown abuse jokes. With Justin Bieber, he's just... You could just easily lump this in as, oh, he's going through a trouble period. Like any star, not just young people. A lot of celebrities go through this fast life and they get caught up in the game and then they recover. And if Justin Bieber is to recover and have a nice career, nobody's going to remember the fact that, oh, yeah, he went through this drug problem. But people are always going to remember Chris Brown for what he did.
Well, and the thing about Chris Brown, I agree, Alfred, that he's taken the biggest hit, no pun intended, to his reputation. Hey-o! But, the thing that I will say in favor of Chris Brown, kind of like we saw with R. Kelly, if you can make some hits, you know, you're not going to make everybody forget, but a good portion of the people will be like, hey, man, I don't agree with what he did, but that song is hot. And I think Chris Brown, just as an artist, I think Chris Brown has a longer shelf life than a Justin Bieber.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't see Bieber, like, reinventing himself and you know, coming out with a new style or a new hit that just makes everybody be like, oh, man, that's welcome back, Biebs, welcome back.
Right. Artistically, I think Chris Brown is in a better position. I'm just talking – when we're talking straight up reputation and what people are going to say about you when you're gone, I think reputation-wise, Chris Brown has damaged himself more than Justin Bieber did. But artistically, I'm absolutely with you that Chris Brown has more staying power.
Yeah. I mean, he's the more talented artist. But you can always make the case that the stuff that Bieber's doing is stuff that a – typical 19-year-old with money ends up doing. You know, granted, I didn't have money like this, and I wasn't drinking and driving at 19. But, you know, you can say, hey, it happens, and I've moved on, and I, you know. But he doesn't seem remorseful. That's the other thing, too. Like, we saw him when he got arrested, got released out of jail. He jumped up on the car like MJ, and he just didn't seem to care. So I'm still waiting for him to have that come-to-Jesus moment.
And again, if you're trying to rehabilitate your reputation, emulating Michael Jackson may not be the best way to go, brother.
Well, trying to rehab his image. I think he wants to be known as a bad boy.
Did you see the photo that he tweeted out today or yesterday? It's him sleeping in the bed with his brother. It just screams Michael Jackson.
Yeah, and
both
then
guys are shirtless and just knocked out. And just,
yeah, then didn't he like take some stripper to because he had that big blow off with what is it, Vanessa Hudgens? I don't even know.
Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez. Okay, I knew it was one of them Disney chicks, and he had the big blow off with her, and then got with this other random scandalous chick, and she was gonna play him for publicity, and then she's like, all of a sudden, she's like, I'm not going to do that because I really love him. And I'm like, somebody got slipped some money or some drugs or something, allegedly. Like, he's just not making – I mean, granted, like you said, he's 19 and, you know, maturity, you know, comes to some folks at different stages in their lives. But you would think that he has a team around him. And then maybe that's the problem, that his team around him is full of people that are sycophants and yes, man. Like, he needs somebody to be like – he needs an old black guy, like somebody 56, 60 years old, just sitting in the corner. Might not want to do that, young fella.
That's 5 to 10.
that's 5 to 10 right there.
Well, Stuart Braun's been his manager forever since he got discovered. And at one point he was on a good path, but I don't know what happened with Stuart. He's still around, but he just seems to have lost direction with Bieber. But maybe someone like Drake can talk to him and try to talk some sense into him because, you know, Drake's had his head straight. You know, you don't see Drake in trouble outside of that that Rihanna brawl at the club, but
yeah,
that wasn't his fault. So
maybe it's like if Drake and Bieber are out in Toronto and Bieber's about to sucker punch a cab driver, Drake would be like, just hold on, we're going home. You don't have to do this, Justin. Oh, man. Oh, but speaking of fisticuffs, you talked earlier, Marcus, about Justin Bieber maybe punching the wrong person and the wrong dude will step up to him. There's another idiot out there, and I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. This is a straight grade A idiot, and he is getting into the ring, literally and figuratively, and somebody going to take this boy's head off. And that is one, George Neighborhood Watch Zimmerman. This is a guy that, much like OJ, should have disappeared, and we should never be talking about this dude again, but unfortunately, he is back, and what is George Zimmerman getting into now, Marcus?
Well, let me start by saying, since I'm going to Orlando next week, I don't think you're an idiot, George. I think you're a fine gentleman. Don't come after me.
He's not coming after you, Marcus.
I might need a hood next week. It's supposed to rain at some point in Orlando. I mean, the hood's up. You never know. So, yes, George Zimmerman is in the news again. He has agreed to participate in a celebrity boxing match on March 1st, and he's ready to take on all comers in the ring. This kid ugly, folks. Depending on who he fights and where he fights, if the venue's not right, I don't know, George.
It's bad enough that he wants to fight, and this TMZ's released this email, or the email to the inbox of people who would want to go in there and fight it. George Zimmerman, which I can only imagine how full that's going to be within 24 hours. But it's bad enough that George Zimmerman wants to go out there and fight somebody. It's even worse, and I can't wrap my mind around the fact that he would like to appear in a public setting and do anything, especially of this magnitude, to where you're inviting customers to walk in and sit down, and just people of the community, many of whom probably would want to get their hands on George Zimmerman. This could turn into a riot. This could not end well for George Zimmerman. His life could literally be on the line, and I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying this.
Or it could not end well for the fan. If you're to figure, you're going to have Zimmerman supporters and Zimmerman anti-folks who are sitting next to each other in this crowd. It just seems like a recipe for disaster. Plus, it's Florida, because, you know, Florida's not exactly the sharpest tool in the shed when it comes to states. So
there's a couple things to unpack from this. First of all, celebrity boxing. I know we've had celebrities in boxing like Joey Buttafuoco or Chyna or Octomom.
Danny Bonaducci.
Danny Bonaducci. Screech from Saved by the Bell. Like, those aren't really celebrities. And, you know, but at least they had some type of claim to fame, except for maybe Joey Buttafuoco. But George Zimmerman on celebrity boxing, like, if I'm the promoter, like, granted, that'll get some attention, it'll get some headlines, but that's a really dirtbag. That's a real dirtbag move to bring this guy out here and put him in a position to where he could get jacked up for real. You know, you're not putting him against another celebrity. You're putting up against anybody. And the game has come out and said he wanted to fight George Zimmerman. You know, George Zimmerman has said that I guess he was open to fighting anybody, including black people, which is a ridiculous statement to make. You know, this could end very badly for George Zimmerman, for the fans. You know, the only person benefiting from this is the promoter. And, you know, as like I said, it's a dirtbag move.
Are there any other type of promoters, though, other than the dirtbags? You kind of got to be a dirtbag at heart to be a promoter.
But Alfred, would you pay to watch this event? And B, would you sign up to fight George Zimmerman?
I wouldn't sign up to fight him because at that point, it's just a circus. And I mean, it's just at the center of that ring, you're not going to want to be part of it. I do believe there's going to be a scene made. Now, I don't even think they're going to go through with it. And if they do, there's going to be a huge riot that I wouldn't want to be in the center of the ring for. I would pay to see it if it was around my area. But, I mean, I would be an outsider looking in. And at the slightest hint of a riot, I'm out of there. But it'd be an interesting environment to be part of. I'll say that.
Would you pay to see this, Marcus?
Not in person, no. I would pay $10 to watch on Ustream, but I wouldn't attend just for fear of
man,
shit hitting the fan, man.
Yeah, like it's a setup, it's a recipe for disaster. Like I'm wondering who the other celebrities on this show are going to be. Like, are we going to see Justin Bieber get involved in this card? Like, like if George Zimmerman is the main person that we've been hearing about from this event that takes place in a month. You know, like the promoter, you're not doing a good job as a promoter. Like I should have known about this wonderful celebrity boxing event before TMZ had to bring the story to me. But matter of fact, what's the email? It's like fightgeorgezimmerman@hotmail.com. Like that, you ask, like you are opening yourself up to like anybody. Like I'm sure, man, there's some goon out there sitting out there right now with his tablet. Like, hey, dog. We gonna fuck this dude up. Like if you're the promoter, you want to select. If you're going to go this way of having the black guy fight George Zimmerman, you need to be especially selective. Like you can't pick Pookie or Nuck Nuck or nobody like that. You need to pick like somebody like Carlton from The Fresh Prince, like Alfonso Ribeiro versus George Zimmerman. That
should probably need some money.
That should be the matchup. Alfonso Ribeiro versus George Zimmerman.
So not the game then, huh?
No. I wouldn't put the game in there.
He's volunteered, though, to fight.
Yeah, so. he volunteered. And he said he would be fighting in honor of the Martin family. And yeah, so yeah. Like, just the rhetoric that would start before the fight, like, I think you could really inflame a lot of people. And, you know, it's kind of irresponsible on the promoter's end to do that.
Yeah, it's very. I mean, this. Let's be honest. This whole thing could just be an elaborate work by the promoter himself. Maybe he hasn't even contacted George Zimmerman. He's just trying to get his name out there. You never know with these promoters. But I mean, I seriously don't think this is going to go down. I think something's going to happen to where someone steps in, and this is just going to get canceled because it sounds too good to be true to me. Like, is this just like a shakedown for like the FBI to just bust all these people who are going to come to the event? Like, oh, here's your enemy, and then as soon as they show up, they lock the doors. Like, all right, everybody who hasn't paid your taxes, line up in a single file line. You're going to jail.
They're searching out for Black Panthers and white supremacists.
Yeah,
it's going to be there. It's
just capture them all.
Don't fall for people.
Yeah, don't fall for that. Okay, though. But I would pay to see George Zimmerman, Alfonso Ribeiro. 3 rounds. It's not unusual. Boom. Boom. You can have that for free, Mr. Scumbag Promoter.
I like that.
So, yeah. Like you guys, I think I would be intrigued. I don't think I would pay for it. Maybe I would see it the next day on nefarious means. But, it's just a bad look. Like, the promoter's doing what promoters do, like Albert said. But if you're George Zimmerman, why would you want these problems in your life?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, promoters, he's just doing his job. I mean, Zimmerman has agreed to, well, we're assuming he agreed to this. So he wants these problems, he can have them.
Like, yeah, you have to be either extremely delusional or incredibly dumb or both. Or, if you're George Simmons or broke, yeah, because yeah. he did split up from his wife, didn't he?
Yes.
So yeah, I mean that's a tough way to go from this hero that's rescued black families out of burning cars.
Yeah.
How quickly things can turn. Oh, George Zimmerman. I seriously thought I would never have to say that name again. But no.
Nope. He's back.
He's back. CM Punk is gone and George Zimmerman is back. What the hell's going on with the world? Like, this is not how I wanted to end the month of January.
Maybe Zimmerman will take CM Punk's spot at WrestleMania.
George Zimmerman versus Triple H.
Versus Kofi Kingston.
It's pot.
You know how right over there. Kofi Kingston would get if he hit the Trouble in Paradise on Zimmerman?
Boom.
That's a nice boom. Little, that's a nice boom. Little bow to this story. Yeah. The George Zimmerman legacy.
Or Biggie Langston.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. That would but knowing Vince, George Zimmerman would go over.
It's good for business.
It's what's best for business.
Let's troll these fans.
And on that note, we're going to put a bow on this show. Again, looking forward to the Super Bowl on Sunday. We'll see if our predictions come true. And I hope it's going to be a good game. So everybody enjoy the game. Be safe. Don't act like a knucklehead and sucker punch a cab driver. Just be cool. So on that note, Marcus Vandenberg, where can the people follow you, check out your work, and write you if they want to start a petition to get Marcus Vandenberg in the ring with George Zimmerman?
No. This is nasty. That's where you can write. you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Big nasty.
At This Is Nasty. No request to fight George Zimmerman. I will not do it.
You can follow me at N8, M-O-Z-A-I-K, name Mosaic on Twitter. Also, check out placetobenation.com for my weekly TNA Impact recap. So by the time you're hearing this, it should be up. And I'll be talking about the big investor as well as one of the creepiest segments I've ever seen on a wrestling program. And that includes Katie Vick. You can follow all of us at cospod_pod on Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. And check us out on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And like, share it, review it. Let your friends know. Let your friends know about the Kings of Sport. So that's going to do it for this week's program. Another fun week. Big shout out again to Morgan Campbell for hopping in and joining the discussion today. And we'll bring you some more good stuff next week. So for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. George Zimmerman, we coming for you, nigga. And you've been down with the King.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Attack like I just left.